are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, episode for Tuesday, October the 15th. And we're talking refs, uniforms, and where the analytics go today. This is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in Detroit City, covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press. Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Just 8 days from now, the Pistons will be playing regular season basketball. But we'd be remiss if we didn't do a little bit on the officials today for a Detroit sports podcast. Feels like as good a time as any to lay down my thoughts. We're also going to talk about the latest raging about uniforms being done by Pistons fans and the latest about some possible alternates, the teal talk, all that good stuff. I'm also going to share with you a quote from a recent story from The Athletic that piqued my interest that I think has something to do with Detroit's offseason in a negative way as well. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons dash Matt Shook. But as we mentioned, or as we've alluded to so far, the Detroit Lions on Monday night lose a heartbreaker, 23-22. Are there any other kinds for Lions fans? At Lambeau Field against the Green Bay Packers, a new low for this franchise and the NFL officiating, all that good stuff too. You guys know that I also cover the Lions for the Detroit News. I know that you're listening to this podcast to talk Pistons, but I feel like we got some crossover fans probably, so we're going to talk about this a little bit, and then we'll tie it into the Pistons just so you guys can't yell at me for talking about just the Lions, where this is a sports issue. And it's an officials issue as well. But to just to run it down, Tracy Walker going for the interception. According to the rule, which I don't agree with the rule, although that's not important, I guess. I think that might have been the right call on him going for that interception and them calling it. It seems ridiculous if you watch the play that it was the right call. The way that the rule is set up, I think it might have been. You had Kerryon Johnson calling that a catch on the sidelines. Then they reversed it after Matt LaFleur's challenge and called it an incomplete pass, meaning that the Lions weren't able to get a first down on that one. In my opinion, I think that was the right call. I don't know. Applying the catch rule, I'll never know that, so I don't know what the rule necessarily says. But if you look, if you watch it, to me, it seemed like a guy who never had control. So I think that was maybe a decent call, too. Again, not by the letter of the law, just by kind of my silly view of a replay. And also the pass interference on Marvin Jones, probably a pass interference. I thought it was at the time, too. But I totally get Patricia not making the challenge there. They never get the reversals. And how isn't Marvin Jones selling that one at all, by the way? I know that that's not central to the idea of whether or not it's a penalty, but certainly we know in life and in pro sports, sometimes you got to throw that acting out there. And for the record, I've been going through some of the Twitter underbelly, probably a bad move on my part, but a large contingent of Green Bay fans, they really think that Kerryon Johnson's touchdown early was fishy on that fourth down play. I wasn't sure on that one either. Thought it might have gotten in on the previous play on third down. Didn't really see any replays on that that were really good. But that was one where they looked at it and couldn't couldn't overturn the call they made on the field, which after huddling, they called a touchdown. So, you know, just want to throw that out there that that's what some Green Bay fans are probably thinking. And then the most important plays, Trey Flowers gets jabbed on the hands to the face calls and the final drive, the last two drives, I should say. And the Lions give up two big third downs. The game is over, et cetera, et cetera. A horrible look for the league. I disagree with those calls, obviously. You know, they were bad calls. And it doesn't matter that it's a horrible look for the league. I don't think that they care about officials' controversies. It's another thing for people like us to talk about on podcasts and sports radio and write some articles on it throughout the week. But it's no skin off their back. I think that some, you know, ESPN, some people are talking about Booger McFarland and Scott Van Pelt. And kudos to those guys for speaking out against the league. But it's not like they're being superheroes about this. I mean, it's people talking about referee controversies are things that kind of help the league, unless you got like a Tim Donaghy situation or like that. The NBA, as we look at it, is going through a situation where controversy is not helping the league. And the China situation, obviously ESPN's not touching that one with a 10-foot pole. And that's where the media and their partners kind of scheme to bury stuff like that. Lions fans, you might get an apology from the league on Tuesday. Obviously, that doesn't matter. Nothing's going to change. So like I said, we're going to try to spin this topic around a little bit and talk about the Pistons, because there is something on my mind about the NBA and officiating coming into the year. We've got a lot of you in the sports market, fans who think that the world is against Detroit, every sport. And I'm here to tell you that every sports fan base thinks similarly, and it's not an entirely unique to Detroit kind of thing. I've been around other fan bases over the years around the country, and I'll say it's a bad look from the outside when you're doing that. You look silly. And I'll also say this, and I've talked about this before. When the 2005 finals were happening, Pistons versus the Spurs, to me, it was back then when you're early 20s, every basket mattered to me. I stayed that summer in East Lansing, interning at the Lansing State Journal. We had some friends where we watched all the playoff games, the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, the seven-game series with the Spurs as well. We would just go nuts during these games. We would scream at the TV, get livid. Alcohol was a factor. We'd throw things. I think we like broke things in my girlfriend's duplex there at the time. It was just obnoxious. And I'm telling you, I know it did not change a thing about those games. And I know it didn't make me feel a lot better at the time. Probably ended that relationship prematurely because of that. And I was in my early 20s back then. And since then, I've kind of gotten out of that the ref stole this from me world. And I just want to just warn some of you guys, or maybe try to pass advice to some of the younger folks out there. It's better to look within about accountability anyways. And also, the fixes that the league makes when you keep complaining about different things, about calls and saying that your team gets jobbed, these fixes that they try to make to help out these situations, they're awful. I would trade all of that, the replays, the challenges. I would give it all up just to be able to sit and enjoy games without going to replays every 5 minutes. For NBA, we've added coaches' challenges this year. I hate it already, but it's a new thing we've got because of all the complaining that we've done over the years, and the replays and the slow-mos and the coaches complaining, the players complaining. You can look forward to me ranting about that some this year, but also be prepared for it to kind of screw up and ruin the ending of a Pistons game, cause an undue loss that maybe they didn't deserve, and know that it's probably going to do that for every team in the league at some point too. And also know that I'm going to be sitting here cursing out the entire replay and challenge system because I just want to watch some sports, watch the games, and go on with my life where I talk about and write about sports for a living. But try to consider my advice about the officials. I promise you it will lead to a much happier sports fan lifestyle. That's just kind of my two cents as we reflect a little bit and talk about officials a little bit more than usual here in the Detroit sports world after a tough and brutal loss for the Detroit Lions. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. Up next, got some uniforms to talk about. Let's get it all out. We're going to talk about the things that bother me just this one episode, and we'll move on to happier times going forward with the Locked On Pistons podcast. But yeah, some hot uniform talk coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
All right, a little bit later on, I'm going to pass along a quote that you might be interested in on a subject that's just kind of rolled on by this offseason for the Detroit Pistons, but also wanted to drop the particulars. Tonight, the Pistons are playing an exhibition game, the second to last one, their first road exhibition game. This one's going to be in Philadelphia tonight, followed by Wednesday night on the road against Charlotte. So we'll be talking about those games, obviously, on the next couple of days of the podcast. That's leading into the regular season, which begins on Wednesday, October 23rd. So a week after Wednesday's ending of the preseason, the Pistons will be in Indiana to play the Pacers on Wednesday, October 23rd. And then the night after that is going to be the Pistons taking on the Atlanta Hawks for the home opener on Thursday, October 24th. Tonight's game, by the way, against the 76ers is on NBA TV. The Pistons will be playing 7 o'clock on NBA TV. Don't know why they're having preseason games on NBA TV, but then the Pistons will be playing at 7 o'clock again on Wednesday as well against the Hornets. The 76ers coming in at 3-0 so far this preseason. They have wins over a team from China and also Orlando and the Hornets. The starters are what you would figure they would be: Tobias Harris, Al Horford, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson. All those guys played over 25 minutes, or over 20 minutes, most of them over 25, in their win over Orlando the other day, 126-94. It looks like Orlando's kind of pumped the brakes a little bit on the early minutes that they were playing some of their top guys as the season has kind of rolled on. Some interesting things to look at for tonight's game. James Ennis III is an old friend alert, but I'm going to keep my eyes on Matisse Thybulle, the rookie there. Shake Milton is a second-year guy off the bench. That's an interesting one. Trey Burke is with them right now. We'll see what his chances are of making the team. Just some interesting young guys that people will take a look on in these next couple of games. Philly and then Charlotte, we know, is a team that will probably be towards the bottom of the NBA standings, maybe competing for the number one pick in the draft this year. But I wanted to talk about uniforms a little bit. We had the reports flying around right now. The Pistons, as a playoff team, will get gifted another alternate jersey that they're going to wear. So there's a lot of rumors floating around, a lot of designs floating around out there. And James Edwards III of The Athletic kind of addressed in a tweet some of these rumors and pointed out that there's apparently some photos of some designs of some red ones out there that were passed along. Maybe it was on a Reddit thread somewhere on the internet, at the dark web perhaps. Some red jerseys that are out there, just like the old school ones of the Chauncey Billups days. James tweeted today that on Monday, he's been told that the one being passed around is not the jersey, but it's not far off, kind of hinting at the fact that maybe the Pistons will be looking at some red alternates to go with the Raiders black and gold Motor City, or no, I'm sorry, black and silver Motor City jerseys, kind of themed after the Bad Boys. And then you got the gray ones, the white ones, and the blue ones. So looking like five uniform sets for teams this year. We know we've talked about in the past about the teal jerseys. And by the way, James had a good oral history of the teal jerseys that you should check out if you haven't seen it yet. It was a story that, full disclosure, I had kind of figured out that I might try to get to this year as well. With all you guys talking about it this past offseason, I talked to Rod and the editors at the sport at the Detroit News, and I was just starting to get that going. But now that James did a great job with it, probably just going to let him handle that and maybe go with another direction if we're going to be writing something about the teal jerseys. But like I said, check that out on The Athletic. Always encourage you to subscribe to The Athletic and James and all the good work that they do there. And we'll talk about a non-James Edwards article in a little bit here on the show. But James did a good job with the oral history, catching up with folks like Tom Wilson, the former czar of the Palace Pistons and Palace Entertainment Group when Bill Davidson's family ran the show. Grant Hill is quoted in this article. And then all sorts of folks behind the scenes that were involved in designing the uniforms. And just some stories about Allen Houston, how he actually wore the uniforms for an unveiling before he left the team that summer to go to the New York Knicks. Some interesting stories about the logos and designs and other things that were explored for that, and also why they ended up choosing some of the designs that they chose. So again, I'll give a plug to that for The Athletic and the uniforms there as well. But speaking of The Athletic, I wanted to talk about one quote that I found from an article in there that I wanted to touch on with you guys. So it kind of sheds some light on what I feel might be a deficiency with the organization right now, and an interesting and somewhat illuminating quote from a former member of the Pistons front office. That's next year on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Also want to let you guys know that we're still looking for your predictions and possibly your bold predictions for the season on the Google voicemail line here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. That number is 810-666-1546. Call and leave a voicemail. Give us your name and where you live as well. What's your prediction for the Pistons this season? Record, or where they're going to finish in the Eastern Conference? How far into the playoffs are they going to go? Are they going to win their elusive first playoff victory in 11 years? Actually, it'll be 12 years by the time 2020 of the spring rolls around. So what do you think? We'll play them on the show here as the another week or so of time to kill before we get Pistons basketball night in and night out coming up very, very soon. And also, as I mentioned the other day, we are looking for a Lockdown Red Wings host. So if you know anyone or are that someone who might be interested in taking on this venture as kind of a side gig in your life, go ahead and contact me. Just give me an email at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com. But I know we talk about The Athletic here quite a bit, and maybe we should be charging them some advertising revenue for all the talking up we're doing today. But John Krasinski writes for The Athletic. He's kind of one of the, seems like one of the NBA editor types, but also writes in Minnesota, where he's covered the Timberwolves for a long time. He was a writer for the Associated Press for a long time, and I've been reading his stuff a lot over the years. But he has an article that came out recently, I believe last week, titled "Rodeos, Trade Machines, and Pick Swaps Inside Sachin Gupta's Road to Minnesota." So talked all about how he was an MIT student and then got his MBA from Stanford, ended up taking a programming job with ESPN for the website there, ended up writing the code in the back end for the trade machine, some interesting anecdotes about that. But he also talked about his time with Daryl Morey in Houston, and then being taken over to Philadelphia after that to work with Sam Hinkie as the process was undergone. Talked about some trades and the way he kind of floated trade ideas to Daryl Morey in Houston. And then with Philadelphia, obviously the trades of the Michael Carter Williams types, the organizational decisions to go ahead and tank, and the kind of conflicted way that history looks upon the Sam Hinkie era and how Sachin Gupta was talked about it. But this is a pretty, lengthy article on Sachin Gupta. In newspaper parlance, it was probably something like 30, 35, maybe even 40 inches long. So a pretty good, nice little Sunday read in terms of how you might think of the bigger stories being in the Sunday paper. I'll tell you one thing that was not mentioned, other than to mention in terms of being listed as places he'd worked, is the season he spent last year with the Detroit Pistons. And that's a guy who, like I said, this is his most recent job. I know it was only one season, but normally when you're profiling people, you're talking about the things that they've done lately the most. And it got me to thinking, well, what did he do in Detroit? And this isn't necessarily a dig at Sachin Gupta. It's probably less so at him than it is at the organization in general. He left. He was an assistant general manager under Ed Stefanski in the front office and has pretty much not been replaced. And that's problematic for an organization that wants to consider themselves as being a little bit on the cutting edge of things. To me, it suggests that Sachin Gupta was possibly brought in as the front office kind of asked for a bunch of different things for Tom Gora's when the new group was brought in. And it sounded really nice to bring in a shiny new toy of the analytics department and paying Sachin Gupta a nice salary to come over and work for the Detroit Pistons. But then it turns out, my guess is that there wasn't a lot of autonomy and there wasn't a lot of opportunities for Sachin Gupta's ideas to be implemented into the organization. And what's my biggest evidence for that? The fact that he wasn't replaced. If you think that the analytics is so important, then why is there not an assistant general manager that's brought in to replace Sachin Gupta? The article that is talked about where he's going and reuniting with Gersan Rosas, who he worked with in Houston, talks about how Gersan's the president of basketball operations. Well, what's the title that Sachin Gupta has? He's the vice president of basketball operations. And so, it was kind of one of three assistant general managers in Detroit. And obviously, if you look at the influences that have been made by guys like Malik Rose with the Detroit Pistons, who's bringing guys over from Atlanta to coach with the G League team, assistant coaches, you can see a little bit of the San Antonio Atlanta influence with this team. With the Pistons. And you can also obviously see the imprints that Dwayne Casey has brought in with the player development, the implementations of the staff that is brought over. Mike Budenholzer's kind of influence with Atlanta and the side of Malik Rose with Sean Sweeney being brought in. And, of course, Dwayne Casey hiring a couple of his old friends in Sidney Lowe. And not that there's anything wrong with that in and of itself, but where's the imprint that Sachin Gupta and the analytics department had with their one season in Detroit? And I thought that this quote that Sachin had in the article with the Timberwolves on The Athletic, written by John Krasinski, was kind of an illuminating one. And it was kind of the closing quote of the article. And Sachin Gupta goes on to say, "Every place I've worked, I've loved it, and it's been great people. But the alignment here is pretty special in a way that I haven't seen before. I'm really excited about the integration we're going to have with the coaching staff. It's been special." So, end quote. That's Sachin Gupta talking about his new great situation in Minnesota. And predictably, he's not taking any shots at the Pistons here. But he is talking about, now, in fact, that he's worked with great people at every stop. So that's a compliment to the character of some of the folks he's worked along with the Pistons. But again, the alignment here is pretty special in a way that I haven't seen before. So alignment within the organization. I'm really excited about the integration we're going to have with the coaching staff. So to me, that sounds like, obviously, he hasn't seen this kind of alignment before in his role and what the overall structure of the organization was. It just, to me, everything I've kind of known about this organization from a little bit of an outsider's view, a little bit of an insider's view, and what we've heard about and talked about in terms of what other teams are doing with analytics, other finds that they've made, other strategy decisions they've made, it doesn't feel like the alignment was in a way that was favorable to Sachin Gupta's skills. Last year, in his 1 year with the Pistons, that he wasn't an analytics darling type of organization like Philadelphia and Houston that we kind of know about as the gold standards of those teams. Again, I feel like Tom Gorris was kind of asking, who should we get? What's the biggest name we can get? How much would I have to pay them for a salary to come over? And yet, this isn't a thing that's valued enough by the organization in the inner workings and the day-to-days to keep a guy like Sachin Gupta around. And if it was very important to this organization, they probably would have rehired somebody and made that happen in the new generation of the analytics front and maybe built on some of the systems that Sachin Gupta brought to Detroit. These are things that we've not really heard all that much about following this team and covering the team over this past year. But that'll do it. Again, I'd recommend checking out that article on The Athletic. That'll do it for another show. I got to hit the bed, but I wanted to get this article out to you guys. So you get it on Tuesday morning. We're going to bring on some of the other Central Division hosts to talk about some season preview type of stuff. Obviously, we'll be talking about the exhibition games over the next couple days. And I'm excited to get the season started with you guys here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.